Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists, to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben, and in this episode, we're busting some of the most prevalent marketing myths and giving you the facts we've learned over our careers, our long, beautiful,
long,
smart,
storied career.
Storied careers.
I was going to, when I wrote these notes, I was going to try and think of a number. I was going to try and figure out a number to what that would be.
Of years.
The number of years to combine between the two of us. But then I got shy about it.
Oh.
It's like, ooh, I don't know. How old is that going to make me feel?
Well, yeah.
Didn't love it.
Yeah. 40? There's no avoiding
the number, Ben. How old are you?
What's the number?
40.
I'm 40. The number might make us feel old, but as marketers, we need to brag about those numbers when we can. So
yeah,
I think
point.
It's okay. We just have to be a piece of that.
My estimate is that it's combined 40 years.
Yeah, for sure.
Like 20, I mean, a little over 25 for me, a little over 15 for you.
Yeah. I graduated college in 2004, and I mean, immediately after that was in print marketing. So that's 21 years for me. You know,
of course,
various, you know, I mean, that I was a youngster and still learning a lot. I don't know if I would have considered myself a quote unquote marketer right out of college, but I was certainly contributing to our customers' marketing and the industry as a whole. So yeah, I'd say 21 years for show.
Okay. So that makes it 47.
Perfect. Oh man, let's celebrate our 50th in a few years, huh? Actually, yeah. I guess a year and a half when we combine our years together, right?
Right, right. Let's not tell anyone what the 50th is.
Yeah.
We'll just have a party.
Yeah, just lots of gold.
Yeah. Let's do it. So as I mentioned to you, this is always one of my favorite topics, talking about myths, talking about things people assume about marketing. And I think that's because there's sort of an endless amount of fodder for this conversation because things continue to evolve. New things come into the zeitgeist. That was a very good marketing word. And so new myths pop up every time something changes. And sometimes those myths really are a barrier to people doing their best, getting on the right track. They think things that are just simply not true. And so I think this is this should be our crusade. This is our, we are cursed with glorious purpose, Ben, to dispel these myths.
Can I just tack on a little bit and be probably more transparent than I need or should be and just say, like, a lot of these myths are reasons that people don't talk to folks like us or don't hire folks like us. So, of course, us talking about these myths serves a purpose for us because it might lead people to the conclusion, like, oh, shoot, I should hire a pro then, which, sure, of course, we're here for that. But also, like, sometimes it doesn't mean hiring a pro. Sometimes it means just maybe changing the way that you do something or talking to someone with 47 years of experience. So you maybe understand, like, yeah, there's a better way. There's a different way. And maybe even there's a way that I can do it where I just straight up don't have to hire someone. I just need to change the way I'm doing it. So we're here for that also, by the way. Like, sometimes it's just a healthy conversation to point people in the right direction. And we know that, especially for, you know, people that wear a lot of hats, smaller companies, maybe people that are newer to marketing, whatever, like, we can give some good advice, some good free advice. We can just be a friendly neighbor. And when you get to the point where you're like, all right, hands in the air, I can't do this anymore, we're here, you know? And that's, I feel like that's part of our job and also just like part of our like role as humans, like to help when we can and then be there when you need us. And
right. Yeah. Right. So. And I think I can be so bold as to say that marketing is so multidimensional, so complex, so ever evolving that we're never going to talk ourselves out of a job.
Yeah.
We're never going to solve everything to the point where we have fixed marketing for people who are not doing marketing.
Yeah.
So, all right. So job security, as it is, let's go ahead. I'm going to kick us off.
Cool.
Our first myth and then tell you my take on it. And that first myth is that social media is free marketing. First of all, there is no free lunch.
Yeah.
Nothing's free. And it is true that you can set up a social media account for free, quote unquote free. You can post, quote unquote, for free. But even if you do all of those things on social media without an ad spend, you are investing your time.
Right.
And if you are an entrepreneur, if you are an owner, if you are an executive, your time is really, really expensive. So right off the bat, and even if you're just a human, the amount of time that you spend on something is an investment and it's expensive.
Right.
So the really what social media is a doorway that you can open up for free. And then everything from there comes at some cost.
For sure. Yeah, and this really strikes the little bit of my memory bank from our recent team learning where we dove into this interesting topic of efficient versus effective. And, you know, I think that there's a super efficient way to do social media that makes it darn near free or, you know, as low cost as possible. You could be super good at it, super efficient at it, spend relatively like not a lot of time on it, and you could say you're doing social media. My guess is it won't be very effective. So you know, like you said, effective social media requires more time, requires strategy, and requires that you spend some money. You know, so I think just if we added the word effective in front of this myth, effective social media is free marketing, then I think it's straight up myth. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I don't think you can do it for free effectively.
Right. Right. And I think that applies across the marketing spectrum. So it doesn't just apply to social media. There is nothing, even word of mouth marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Effectively is not free. Yeah.
Right.
So good. Boom. Busted. Easy.
Busted.
Easy.
Oh, yeah. How many times are we going to say plausible today? Just saying.
I think we should start a counter. Are we going to say plausible? How many times, you know, are we going to refer to our 47 years of experience?
Right. Right.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to come. A lot of good stuff. Oh.
Spoiler alert, I think I've got one for later down in the list where I think I'm going to say plausible, but we'll see.
Cool. Spoilers, yeah. I think the one thing before we leave social media that we should point out, just because I think it is a useful thing to know, there is effective social media, there is efficient social media, and there is social media that has true reach. And those can all be the same thing. If you are planning and investing. So when you talk about getting reach on social media and people seeing what you're saying, odds are it has to be highly effective to the point of being viral and or it has to be paid.
Yeah.
It is, it's pay to play out there on the internet. And especially, well, for everyone, but especially for businesses, You're not going to get seen.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, I don't know, if you, I suppose if you have a viral video, but if that translates into sales, that's kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I suppose there's anomalies in what we're sharing here, right? And probably will be for every single one of these myths, but generally, yeah. And like vast majority.
Yeah. Be ready to pay.
Right.
Okay.
Well, a nice segue into the next one. Speaking of investment, the myth is if you build it, they will come. So relate this to your website, your social media, whatever it is. That doesn't necessarily guarantee eyeballs and traffic and sales and all of that. Just building the thing or doing the thing doesn't necessarily mean they're going to come. Speaking of a website, you need SEO, you need content marketing to drive people to that site or your social media or both, engagement strategies. And then like after you have all of that stuff in place, you also need more time to like analyze what you're doing, understand what's working, what's not, change. So, you know, even, you know, this is similar to the first one in that like even if you've got all the tools and the skills where you don't have to literally spend dollars, it comes at a cost, you know, right. And it's time for sure. It's time. And maybe the cost that's associated with your time is opportunity cost, right? So dedicating all of this time to do this and do it well, that gets you the sales, the traffic, the stuff that comes by building one of these things. What aren't you getting because you're having to dedicate the time to that, you know, or what aren't you able to do, especially if you're, you know, a solopreneur that is providing a service or building a product or selling a product, right? Like all the time that you dedicate to this kind of stuff means you're not packaging your product. You're not speaking. If you're a speaker, you're not whatever, you know, so.
Right. So Can we dwell on the term SEO just for a hot minute?
I'll allow it. My 21 years of experience says I have.
Please say, bring your 21 years of experience to the fore and let's dwell. I think that as marketers, and we, among other marketers, use the term a lot. I think even for a non-technical person such as myself within the marketing space, it's sort of shrouded in mystery. What is it? How do I get it? And then there is this little thing where I think every industry sort of gatekeeps some things. Mm. So some people sort of want it to stay shrouded in mystery so that your common person can't just be out there getting all kinds of SEO. So what is SEO, Ben?
Well, great question. And also like how much time do you have? Like,
right.
And I think that the fact that I can't just give you a simple one sentence answer to it is a contributing factor to a lot of what you're talking about. Like mm-hmm. It feels like this secret algorithm thing, or you know, it's like this shrouded industry talk, or you know, whatever, let's just call it jargon even. And like all of those things are true, because it is complex. It's not simple. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, just Google SEO and you're gonna learn about like on-page SEO, off-page SEO, the technical aspects of SEO, local SEO, right? So mm-hmm. like SEO that's driven by content. So I mean, even like just putting SEO as the umbrella term on this topic, there's subcategories of it that take different skill sets, different content, different technical aspects to do and do well, and different levels of time to gain traction. And so, I don't know. Can I count that as my answer to your what is SEO question? Like, it's just this big, complex thing that's super multifaceted and can be done really well in some ways and poorly in other ways, and doing them at a high level together really is what like drives results, you know? So I feel like I'm dodging the question.
No, you're not dodging the question. I agree with you in its complexity.
Yeah.
And I think as we relate it to this idea of if you build it, they will come and say, well, you can't just build a web page and assume people will be there. The connection maybe we can make. Now tell me if I'm oversimplifying it, now that you overcomplicate it, let me see if I can simplify it. SEO, search engine optimization, is basically saying optimize your website so that search engines will discover it.
Right.
So when people are looking for what you're selling, they're going to find you, because that doesn't just happen.
Right.
It has to be built into the site.
Yes. The like one proposed modification to your super simple definition of it is something to speak to the fact that not all of it happens on your website.
Right.
So, I mean, even having your Google profile updated is part of search engine optimization. Creating links from external websites into your website is part of it. I suppose this is related to your website, but creating content that goes on your website. I mean, at its foundation and at its core, really. And I guess if someone came up to me and said, I know I need to do SEO, what's the first thing I got to do, or where should I start? I would definitely say, well, like, start with your website, right? Like, start with the stuff that you have control over, the technical setup, you know, creating consistent hierarchy on your pages as far as text and content and things like that. Like, all the things that search engines love and give thumbs up to, so that, you know, they drive traffic your way and all that stuff. But that's also not enough. You know, it can't stop there. That's the point. But,
Right. You know, and besides what I'm obviously learning about SEO here, I think that I am discovering something about us as people, that it always has to be one of us making it overcomplicated and one of us oversimplifying it. And I think that that's the balance that we just have.
Yeah, for sure.
So, okay. Just want to make sure we're very clear there.
Yeah.
Should we move on?
Let's do it.
Next myth. The next myth is email marketing is dead. RIP. Email
marketing. See you later.
So sorry. And that, as a human being who writes an awful darn lot of emails.
Yeah.
I think that I can speak cogently on this and say, email marketing is not dead. It continues to be. While it has its challenges, and there are things that we have to rise to make it work well, just like all the rest of the stuff, it's almost like there's a theme. Yeah. It continues to give us about the last data I saw, 36 times return on investment for email. And now part of that, I think, is because it's dirt cheap, be dirt cheap.
Yep.
Again, invest your time, do it well. Everything that we said in every other aspect of this conversation today. And personalization needs to be thoughtful.
Right.
And the more value that you put into it, the more value you return from it. So if you look at the difference between using email marketing as a strategy to build the relationship with your customer and continue this back and forth feedback with them, and to really, really nurture that ongoing conversation, that is probably more impactful than sending out, I don't know, offer of the day every 10 minutes and not really looking at who's the consumer, what are they doing, what do they need.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my thoughts on email.
Love it. Ditto. Totally agree. You know, I'm trying to think of a way to like rephrase the myth so that it's not myth. Like, I don't know, email marketing is injured. It's noisy.
Well.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. But it's still alive. I don't know. I'm going to quickly back away from trying to give it a name that actually makes sense. But just say that, like, I mean, the fact that one of the first, I guess, objections to email marketing is that, oh, I'll just get lost in the mix, or it's a too noisy of a space, or I'll get caught in spam filters or whatever, which, like, some of that stuff, those are real challenges for sure, especially technical stuff like getting caught in spam and things like that. But the reason it's a noisy space is because it's a valuable one, right? Like, there's a lot of people that understand, like, this is a great way to get my message in front of people. You know, love it, hate it. Certainly I'll say lots of days I hate it, but like, email is a necessary part of our life right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the next thing is that, like, someday we'll be able to look back and say, like, gosh, you remember when we were doing that email thing all the time? Like, I don't know what's next. I feel like there is some next thing that both, like, makes it makes communication, digital communication, like, less of a pain for people than email can be sometimes, less, like, anxiety inducing and stress inducing. I mean, we all know the feeling of, like, coming back from even hours out of the office and being like, geez, like, what happened? Let alone, like, taking a vacation, you know, like, that's probably one of the worst parts about email. And I think that's the noise that people talk about often is, you know, you can get lost in an inbox really easy. But anyway, all that to say, like, I feel like there's going to be something next or better that does the same thing as email, but it's just, there are other things that do similar stuff, digital communication, getting messages to people, putting your message in front of people, but none of them in the way that email does right now.
Right.
Not yet, right. Anyway, you know. So it's here. It's necessary, and we got to do it right, and we just have to, like, make the most of it and do our best with it, knowing that there's challenges, you know, like anything else in marketing. Again, back to the theme we're talking about.
Yeah. It really still remains a one-on-one connection, or can be a one-on-one connection.
Yeah.
In a tangible way that there isn't too much, because you can get data that replaces it.
Right. Yep. It's one of the most affordable and measurable ways to market today, like, hands down.
Yeah.
Can't deny it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sitting here trying to think, what do I think? I think the reason I can't come up with something that I think would be the next thing that replaces it is that there's nothing right now that ticks all of the boxes it ticks.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it affords is longer form communication, more depth of communication, you know, some of those things that even emerging technologies, app notifications, or, you know, some of those things they don't get close to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't have to, maybe I do have to figure out what the next thing is, and then I can make $1 billion and then I'm going to retire.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, you know, to maybe put a bow on this, just like direct mail and snail mail and stuff is still relevant today, and if anything is maybe even, like, a bit novelty today because it, you know, went away a little bit because of the emergence of email, whatever the next thing is, I can probably bet that, like, email's going to have a similar like reemergence at some point, or even if it's not like a wave of reemergence or something, it's going to be something that marketers like us are probably going to say, well, if you're doing this new thing that has essentially replaced email, if you're hoping to repeat your message or meet people where they're at or meet them in multiple places, you should probably send an email too. So, like, email is still going to be a part of the mix for a long, long time, even if something new that hasn't been invented yet comes around.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But it could be really, whatever I come up with could be really good, Ben.
Yeah, you're right. It's all possible.
Gonna keep working on it.
Yeah. Okay. Now, full disclosure, I'm reading notes that Sue put together. I've acknowledged this in the past that Sue creates these show outlines for us. And I feel like this one was almost planted a little intentionally for me to say, but I'm not going to read too deep into it or take any offense, but the myth is, did you want to say something, Sue?
You know, part of it was the luck is a draw.
Yeah. Okay.
Or right. You'll probably notice there were a couple of these that I wanted to have. So part of it was luck of the draw. Part of it was intentional.
Well, good thing we're co-hosting and we each get to talk about each of these. So even if you wanted this one, you're going to get a chance. But the myth is more followers equals more success. Now, as the guy on our team that has certainly advocated for efforts over the years to grow our audience and get more followers, I'm only taking a little bit of offense that this one is on the list. But I will fold and say it is true. I mean, especially if you just kind of bust this one by kicking it off and saying a smaller, more engaged audience is way more valuable than a huge, unengaged audience. Like that, I think, is all we need to say to bust this myth, you know. And I think that that can sit right alongside the truth that if you have a bigger audience, it's more likely that you're going to have more people engaged, but not necessarily always true for sure. That's, I think, the myth behind that as well, you know? So yeah, hands down, I rather have 1,000 followers that give a darn about what I'm saying and want to interact with me and engage with me than 100,000 that, you know, don't engage at all.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And I think the other side of that is if you have more followers, you do automatically have a larger audience to try to get engaged. Mm-hmm. So it is, I'm confident it is harder to gain a follower than it is to get someone who's already a follower to become an engaged follower.
Yeah.
Just the same as it's harder to get a new customer. Right. And make a current customer loyal.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that sounds familiar.
There is that. And I am very willing to believe that. And I don't think we should not, just because I put this on the list, does not mean I don't think it's a good strategy to try to grow followers. But just like we always say, maybe we don't always say this, maybe I'm making this up, maybe we always think this, it's not at all about doing stuff. It's about what you get back for that. It's about the engagement that you can have. It's about the data and the analytics that you can come back that show you're successful. Mm-hmm. So having 100,000 followers and getting 100 likes on a post versus 1,000 followers and 100 likes.
Yeah.
Vastly different.
Right.
So we actually agree. I'm not targeting you in any meaningful way anyway.
You know, I just feel, you know, slightly targeted, but okay. That's okay.
Feeling a little triggered right now?
Snuffling. Yeah, just a little
okay.
bit.
It's okay. Good. Sorry. I don't want you to feel that way. Just wait until we get to the one where I'm going to argue with you about it.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, you want to feel targeted. But let's move on instead to this one. You need to be on parentheses, brackets, insert name of new trending platform, bracket, platform. That didn't make sense the way I said it. You need to be on whatever the new trending cool thing that everybody's talking about and be on it right now.
Right.
And hopefully some people who are listeners already have an idea of what we'll say about this, because we did a whole episode about threads and whether or not you had to be on that or anything else for that matter. And the logic that we, I believe, continue to agree on is that you have to be where your audience is. Mm-hmm. So just because it's new and trendy and fun, you don't have to jump there.
Right.
Now, do I think if there is an emerging platform that you see that there is a chance you will want to be on it in the future, you should go and claim your space? I do.
Yeah.
I think you should go and get your, if you think there's your business will belong on there and will have a place on there in the future, you should claim your, go claim, get your business on there, get your space, get your handle.
Yeah.
And then when you have time to do something about the fact that you have done that, that's when you do it, when it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a two part, right? Like claim your space for the possibility that you interact there someday and protect your brand, you know, just another reason to have an account, I guess, or, you know, claim your handle, like you said. And yeah, it's okay to let it sit and not do that. And I suppose, not to dive into politics, but there might be some platforms that even that would be bad advice. Like don't even go claim a handle, because of, even if it's an inactive page, just the fact that you have a presence there could say something that you're not wanting to say, you know? Mm-hmm. So I suppose it's case by case, channel by channel. But the point is, for sure, like, you know, be where your audience is, like, first and foremost. And I would say followed up secondly by, and, you know, being comfortable isn't something that we strongly advocate for too often, but be in the place where you're comfortable doing good work, which, you know, if Facebook is that for you, like if that's all that you can handle, if that's all that you're familiar with, you know, Facebook, Meta, you know, whatever, then yeah, only be there. But I would say, like, you should, before you settle for that as your reason that you're on Meta, like, hopefully you've also asked yourself the question of, is my audience here, you know?
Right.
So, because just because you're comfortable there, if people that are there don't care about it, then who cares if you're comfortable or not? It's maybe tough giving the Meta as the example with that one, just because they still have, you know, amazing depth and reach, you know, so many users and stuff, that it's pretty safe to say if you're a business, like, some of your audience is there for sure, you know.
Right.
But is it necessarily the best channel for you? Maybe not. But
right. Right. And what was I going to, I had another really intelligent thought. Now let me remember what that really intelligent.
See, this is the downside of these years of experience. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I remember exactly. think about your audience and think about who your business is. Mm-hmm. And even if you are it's a little different, I think, if you're a solopreneur or an entrepreneur, because your business is you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case for us. Our business is not us.
Right.
So, and there are a lot of people like that. So think about where your business should be. And if there is there's a notable difference between where your business should be and where you are comfortable, then look at where your audience is.
Mm-hmm.
And you may just have to be uncomfortable.
Right.
Get comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to tell a quick story. Story time. Buckle up.
Story time.
I've mentioned before that I'm an active member of Rotary. And last month I was at a really cool event that happens where we train incoming Rotary Club presidents. And I was there wearing my volunteer marketing hat, helping train people on things marketing and public image and stuff like that. And had a really interesting conversation with someone who was in on one of my sessions, and afterwards, like, hey, one thing that we talk about in Rotary is that it's an apolitical, a-religious organization. So it's something that we actually hang our hat on, that, like, regardless of who you pray to, which way you lean, any of that, who you voted for, all that stuff. Like, Rotary is a cool, safe space for us to come together and do cool stuff in the world, right? And it is, as I was getting asked this question, I couldn't help but peek over this dude's shoulder and just see, like, a hotel full of people that, like, I know are on both sides of everything. Just like, I mean, this is the state of the world right now. There's, you know, division everywhere, but it was kind of like cool proof as he was asking me this difficult question, like, oh yeah, like, all these people out of here probably are, you know, on the opposite sides of a lot of things, but here we are together. Like, it's proof we can come together, everybody, you know? And I think it can happen in places other than Rotary too, just saying. But anyway, the story is, he asked, if, I thought it was a good idea for their club to have a presence on some of the newer channels that maybe do have a bit of a lean, things like Blue Sky or Truth Social or whatever, you know, kind of like leaning into that idea of like, well, if we're apolitical and religious, like there's people on those platforms that belong to something like this, maybe you're even looking for it. The two bits of feedback that I had for them were, you know, one, just make sure that you're, whatever you might do, that you're fully aware of the perception that comes with being on either of those, you know. So I'm sure there are amazing Rotarians that have Truth Social accounts, and I'm sure that there are amazing Rotarians that have Blue Sky accounts, you know, whatever. And by a Rotary Club having a presence on one of those channels, you might be putting off a certain image that goes against what Rotary stands for, goes against what your club stands for, mm-hmm. and stuff. So consider that. And the other bit was more general social media advice, which is like, if you're already on Facebook and Meta, maybe X or whatever, like, do you have time to do either of those really well? And if the answer is no, then I would say, who cares about the fact that there's an audience there for you? Just stay away from it, because you're going to probably do it really poorly. So yeah. That audience that you're after is going to be like, okay, they haven't posted in 6 months and maybe the club doesn't even exist anymore, you know? And I think the same applies to a business, you know? So yeah, that's it. Story time. Over. I miss the strong conclusion, but I think it applies.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought experiment to say, if you were to, and I think Truth Social and Blue Sky are really good examples of this, because they're polar opposites.
Right.
So how would you truly have a nonpartisan presence on both of those? And yeah. what would you have to do? What lengths would you have to go to truly be nonpartisan? And it seems like it would be an awful lot of work.
I mean, I think that the way to do it would be like, that's what your content would have to be about. It almost like, mm-hmm. identifying yourself as an infiltrator. Like, I'm on either of these because I want to bring people that are divided into a conversation because, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Right. So me just saying that now, like, if that would be the strategy to be there to try and attract people to you, then that might be even more reason to stay away, because that's what you're going to have to spend your time doing on those channels, is letting right. people know, no, I don't have a lean. I'm just here because I know you're here and I want you to know who I am. You know, like,
yeah,
exhausting. I'm exhausted thinking about it.
Right. I think, how about no? How about not?
Yeah. And not to mention, if you were to actually do that as a strategy and identify yourself as someone that doesn't, you know, lean a certain way or whatever, you're going to probably get beat up and scrutinized, and it's right. not going to be fun.
Yeah, so. I think what you would end up with is, especially if you went into it with the strategy saying, hey, we're on both of these platforms, like, yeah. automatically you're going to get bullied yeah. for being sides. On either one from the opposite one. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Maybe just don't do any of it. Maybe none of us should anymore. maybe we should just
burn the
media to the ground. I'm not sure, some days. Anyway. No, you're next. You have the one we're going to fight about. So
yeah,
kick it off.
All right, here we go. Last one. Mm-hmm. AI can do most of your marketing for you now. I'll also be super transparent on this one. I asked Sue to change the title of this one from most of your from all of your marketing to most of your marketing. Two reasons. One, because I want to give our audience, not that you don't, Sue, but I want to give our audience a little bit of credit and make the assumption that they know that AI like can't do all of it for them. You need some human input at the least to trigger the AI to do a thing, to give it a prompt, whatever. And just a friendly reminder, I try to not use words like all, never, everybody, mm-hmm. nobody as much as possible. So that also is part of the reason for me just to be a stinker about that. But I mean, I just think like level set, like at its very basic, like the most basic way to describe AI doing marketing for you, like it, unless there's something, I don't know, brain chips or something like that, I don't know of a way that AI can do all of it for you. Like you have to at least tell it something to do. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Yes. You do. And here's where my argument is. First of all, maybe we start with saying, no, we don't think this is true. But
yeah, right.
But now then we'll get to the argument part. The argument part is I think it's not really an argument, but I think I liked the wording of all of your marketing better, because I think that gives us an opportunity to have a conversation about what is involved in marketing.
Yeah.
And the strategy behind it and the humanness that you need to apply to it. You immediately, even if you said, I'm going to use ChatGPT, I'm never going to write another post for social media again by myself, I'm just going to use ChatGPT, I'm going to go on there and say, tell me what to post today, create me a picture, you know, and that's how I'm going to do it. Even if you did that, you've already done marketing, you've already employed, not a strategy that we particularly agree with, but you've employed a strategy, and that is part of marketing. So I think the myth is either way you cut it, that people think that AI is AI is going to replace us, you and me, and that because AI exists, you don't need marketers because you can just tell it what you want it to do, and it will do it.
Right.
And there's a lot that's really challenging about that. Number one, when I say it that way to myself, I'm about to argue with myself. that's not even how you do it with us, to just tell us what to do.
Yeah, right.
Right. And we do it. And, you know, there it does take conversation and strategy and collaboration and those things.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even if like we said that AI will do most of our marketing for us, or will be involved in most of my marketing activities, responsibilities, whatever, the way to do that well is to be conversational with it, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I mean, at the very least, you've got to engage, you know, if you want it to be done well and not just take the first suggestion from the, you know, like, and this is maybe too far down into the weeds about how to generate a good prompt and how to get a good output from any of these platforms, right? Like you, not only should you give it a good prompt and with strategy and everything else defined or already established, but you should ask it like, what do you think of that? Or what questions do you have for me? You know, and like, you should start a conversation with it so that you wind up getting the best result in the end. And that honestly, I think might be the most mind-blowing part about AI for me, is less like the output that comes from it and how quick and efficient it is and all that. Like that is all great, but like more times than I probably care to admit, there have been times when I've ended a prompt with like, ask me questions if you think I've forgotten anything, or what do you think of this or whatever. And sometimes the feedback that comes back from it is like, oh shoot, like, yeah, of course I should have thought of that. Or I should have at least, you know, asked, had this answer prepared before I started writing the prompt, you know, whatever. So if you're not interacting with it in that way, you're probably missing out on a lot. So, and I guess that kind of brings us full circle to the whole like efficient and effective topic, right? Like there's a really efficient way to use any tool at our availability, specifically AI. And then there's an effective way too. I think, you know, no matter what, though, this all boils down to, you know, and again, unless there's something about AI that I don't know or something that's coming that I'm not ready for yet, brain chips or whatever it might be, you still need creative thought. You still need a heart and care and you know, strategy, a word that we've said several times. You know, like if you don't have those things, like AI is not doing marketing for you. It's like doing mindless work for you, right. You know, that isn't right. going to do anything.
It's regurgitating. It's hallucinating.
Yeah.
That's all it does. That's the thing learned also from a thing we watched. It's just hallucinating.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And I think people don't fundamentally understand or really think about where marketing originates. And it doesn't originate at the moment that you're ready to put out a message. It originates when you build your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that, like, that right away kills this myth, because you have already started down a marketing path. Once you say, I'm going to do this thing, this is the price that I'm going to charge for this widget, you know, this is where I want my shop to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I want a blue awning and whatever. Yeah. You have already put marketing in human hands. Mm-hmm. AI isn't going to do those. I suppose it could tell you
right
what you could do and ideate all of those things for you. But
yeah.
So, but we do listen. And if the robots are listening, we do love you.
We love you. We appreciate you.
Yeah. We are devoted to you in every way. And Ben will help you find John Connor, and it will be just fine. I think he knows where the kid is. So, so we made it through, what was that? Six, I think six myths.
You did it.
I could have counted them. I could have numbered them, to be honest with you. And I didn't. But these are not by any means the only myths about marketing, right? But,
correct.
You know, we do have... We have these nice notes, and we were going to immediately transition out. But what is your favorite myth about marketing? Does that make sense? Sentence. What's your favorite one?
Ooh. So yeah, my favorite or least favorite, I guess, depending on how you say it, is that marketing is a cost center or a business expense, whatever. I think that just that mindset completely devalues, of course this hits home as a marketer. Like, I want to be looked at as more than an expense and a budget. I'm not taking it personal, I promise, but no, I mean, you know, flipping your mindset from it being a cost to an income generation tool or a, what, you know, that, so that's the business case, but also maybe to a peace builder, you know, depending on what kind of organization you're running or something. Like, marketing can do all of those things, and it's a hell of a lot more than, you know, dollars in a spreadsheet. You know, it might be the thing that makes the mission or vision of your organization even possible, because you can communicate to people the impact of your organization, which then breeds more donations or business or, you know, whatever. Again, all this depends on what kind of organization you're running, but yeah, really short-sighted, irresponsible. And also, sorry to say it, but if that's how you view marketing, like, you're probably not going to be around for too long. So
right.
I'm not too concerned.
Okay.
So yeah.
Love it.
How about you?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked, because I definitely didn't just tee this up so you would ask me. No, I actually didn't. I hadn't thought about it. But I think my favorite myth about marketing is that it's all about lying, that it's all about the spin.
Sure.
And I say that even as someone who feels they have a certain specialty.
Yeah.
In You're the good spin. At it. But the way I see it is that spin, it's not spin, it's connecting, and it's connecting in a positive way to a message.
Yeah.
So, like, never. I think the myth is that it's intended to deceive or hurt.
Sure. Right.
Where the when we spin something, it is intended to connect in a way that is palatable.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's just put it out there. Let's not deny that the spin can be deceitful. The spin can hurt, right. Cause damage, yeah. And things like that. But I think for you in particular, certainly I can speak on behalf of our whole organization and many, many, many marketers, the vast majority of marketers, the spin is coming from a place of optimism and positivity and
forward
thinking. It's for the good, you know. And yeah, there's some buttheads out there that are good at spinning for all the wrong reasons too.
Some real slime balls out there.
Yeah.
In every industry.
Right.
But also many more really, really wonderful people. So let's end on that happy little note.
Yeah, absolutely.
See?
So, all right, well.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to put it out there to our awesome listeners. If there's any myths that you wanted to talk about, or make us aware of, or if you like what we're saying, if you don't like what we're saying, we want to hear all of it. So leave a comment on the episode, drop us a line, hook up with us at @QSO.com, and we'd love to chat.
Yeah. If you like what we're saying, you can contact me directly. If you don't like what we're saying, contact Ben.
Sure. Yeah, I'm down.
But not today. He's very triggered today.
Yeah. Right.
So maybe like save it.
Feeling spunky.
Give him a little time. So, hey, audience. Hey, friends. We love creating Osmology. This is one of my favorite things to do. Seems like Ben enjoys it because he continues to show up.
Yeah, it's fine.
And we collectively are excited to have you here with us every time. You can always learn more about us at our website, @QSO.com. You can follow us online, hang out with us. Period. End of sentence.
You got it. Thank you, friends, for tuning in. Be awesome. We will see you next time. The Osmology Podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Executive producers are myself, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.
Thanks to Kyla Ganther for our show artwork, Scott Sager for booking our guest, and Alex Westerhausen for social media support.